respects and bow to Venerable Ajahn Anand, Venerable Ajahn Somchai, the Mahateras, great elders, the Teras, the elders, friends, fellow monastics, and give my greetings and blessings to all the laity at Wat Mapchan here in Thailand and in other countries as well. We see that all of you have wisdom to come seek out this peace of heart. So I give my welcome to you all again. You've all come to practice Dhamma on this online retreat, that you don't have to travel here to Wat Mapchan, and you can still practice Dhamma wherever you are, even if the time is different and the time zone is different. It's not an obstacle for those with faith to seek out this happiness of heart. So I was thinking about this, about the different periods in our lives as humans, that do we have happiness? Because we see that the fully self-awakened Buddha taught about suffering, about dukkha, about these Four Noble Truths. Like, how is suffering? What's the cause like? What's the end of suffering like? What's the path to that? And then looking at this, the question might arise, well, in our lives then, is there any happiness? Do we find any happiness? So thinking to ever since from birth and forward, or from the time of birth and then after, right after birth, then we're ones that receive. We don't yet give, because we don't yet have the strength to give. But we receive from our mother and father, who give us life, give us birth, and care for us. So we don't yet seek out anything, we don't give anything, but we receive from the mother and father since birth, receive from our caretakers. So having been born already, then we have this type of happiness, that we receive the care from the caregivers, from the mother and father, for example. And so we live life like this, as those who receive. And so in the beginning, all the humans have this type of happiness, because we don't yet have to seek out the four requisites of life. So after this period, we come to the time where we're able to care for ourselves, to seek out the four requisites for ourselves. So we're able to look after ourselves. We can gain material wealth, gain the four requisites, like seeking out a job or livelihood, gaining money or wealth. And then we can use this wealth that we've gained to give. It enables us to become a giver. So in the beginning, being a giver, the clearest or easiest type of this is doing dana, practicing dana, which is the practice of generosity. So whatever amount of strength we have that we get from these four requisites that we've gained, then we can practice generosity. And so there's many types of generosity, a lot of examples that we can look at of different ways to be generous. Like, there's giving to the poor and needy, helping the elderly, helping the sick or in hospitals, helping at schools, helping poor countries. And so we can do this a lot. Or we can make merit, make offerings at a monastery. And so this is dana, this is generosity, this is merit and goodness that gives us this happiness of heart. And so this is when we enter this another period, this time in our lives, when we're able to give, having come from the period at the very beginning where we are receivers. So therefore, for all of us, we practice generosity. We see that even the fully self-awakened Buddha has this dana parami. It's actually the first of the 10 paramis. When we look at the list of the 10 spiritual perfections, the 10 paramis, as Dana Parami, perfection of generosity, is first. And so the Buddha taught this, to have Dana, generosity, in the beginning. And this Parami arises from practicing generosity, and it makes the mind humble, gentle, and to see or to be a percipient of ever higher levels of goodness. And so from that, then we move on to the happiness that arises from virtue. So we have this happiness from giving, generosity, that's one type, gives strength and energy to one level. And then we come to speak about the happiness from virtue. And this virtue, it's taking care of our behavior of body and speech to be at a level that's normal. And when virtue is full, when sila is full, then our life is normal. We have this happiness that's natural. So this is because we're not harming others, not harming ourselves. And this is an even higher level of happiness. And it's a foundation for us to move on to bhavana, or mental cultivation. So I think back to the time when I had yet to ordain. And this issue of generosity, of dana, is easy to understand, easy to do. But virtue, sila, is harder. And the cause is because using or living our lives in the present, there's a lot of agitation or chaos comes from interacting with other people, being around other people, having a job, having work. So to observe virtue, even the five precepts, they weren't complete. So in life, or living my life, the five precepts were not complete. In a given year, there was maybe one or two days of having the complete five precepts. I'm not sure about that. So you should all be happy that you have the five precepts or eight precepts on this retreat time, something to be quite proud of. So we see that we have this strength and energy from generosity, from dana, the parami from observing virtue. Then we come to the point of practicing mental cultivation, or bhavana. And so we come to this point, and speaking about bhavana, the happiness that arises from mental cultivation, we could say meditation, it's different than the happiness that comes from giving or virtue. And how is that? Because in truth, we see that this happiness of generosity and virtue, it is also a type of happiness of heart, or peace of heart as well, but it's comparatively less compared to the happiness from meditation. The happiness from meditation, or from mental cultivation, meditation, it gives us strength and energy that's very significant, that's a huge amount. And even to the point where we can reach the end of suffering in our lives. So the fully self-awakened Buddha taught us to meditate, to train the mind, because this is the pinnacle of goodness, the pinnacle of happiness. And so this this meditation, it's able to put a complete end to the defilements, the craving, attachment, and we can go to Nibbana. But what do we then do to give rise to this peace, this happiness, this tranquility and happiness that arises from meditation? So it's what we're all doing entering this retreat. So those that have trained and practiced meditation already before the retreat, this is a time to review and take a look at, or to strengthen our meditation practice, to increase it, to do it in a more strict way, to give rise to even more strength and energy from the meditation. And those that have not meditated before, it's a very good opportunity to learn and study, to see what is meditation like, and to see some examples and see how it is to meditate in reality. So before ordination, I understood, or my understanding was this way to train the mind was just reciting the meditation word, meditation mantra. So I was interested in Anapanasati, using the breath as the meditation object, along with Bhutto, having mindfulness, not letting the mind go elsewhere. And then once I ordained, I learned from Venerable Ajahn Anand that there are two different ways to meditate, to train, cultivate the mind. There's using the meditation word to bring about peace of mind. Then there's also contemplation to bring about peace of mind. And so this is an interesting point. So Venerable Ajahn Anand would teach this, and teach that people these days have a lot of wisdom. They like to think, they like to contemplate as their primary activity. So if people from the present day come to sit and just recite a meditation word like Bhutto, Bhutto, then maybe they don't like that. And so therefore they can have an interest in contemplation. And what do we then contemplate? Well, for instance, it could be contemplating merit and goodness that we've done in the past. We bring that to mind. Or a Dhamma teaching, a point of Dhamma that we're interested in. And it's something that makes an impression on the heart, brings about this ease of heart. And so this is another way, this is one way to bring the mind to peace. So it's like this. So in the beginning we see that there's these two ways to bring about peace of mind. And so we choose one. We can choose the meditation word to bring about peace and collectedness, or samadhi, or contemplation to bring about peace. So in the beginning, we can take a look and see which way is suitable for ourselves. We can try it out. And then we do one. And so we see that in the beginning, we come to practice, train the mind, meditate, or bhavana. And we try to make it something that the mind is interested in, so that the mind comes to love the meditation or enjoy it. Because if we hear the word meditation or bhavana, then we want that to be something that we want to do, because it's something that gives us happiness. And so we see this, we understand this, that it's something that gives us this strength, this energy of heart and mind, and this gives us a lot of motivation to practice Dhamma further. So the great masters, the Krubajans, teach to those. So if you haven't yet started meditating, you first have this belief that meditation does give true peace of heart, true happiness. But in the beginning, people just starting to meditate, they receive this teaching, and then what's left is to actually do the meditation. But then once we start practicing, then each person has this quality of wanting arise, wanting the peace, wanting the true happiness of heart. And so some individuals, some practitioners, when they have this wanting arise in the mind, they might become are more hardworking, have more effort in their meditation. But then having meditated already, they might feel like, oh, it's still not peaceful. And so the great masters have taught that so when we meditate, then we have to put down this wanting first. Because in the beginning, all practitioners or all individuals want this peace. And so We all want this peace, but when we come to meditate, we have to put down this wanting. We have to put it to the side first, because this wanting is an obstacle that prevents our mind from becoming peaceful. So if it's peaceful, that's fine. If it's not peaceful, that's fine. So Venerable Ajahn Anand often teach not to have liking or disliking, or not to fall into attraction or aversion. And I would hear this teaching when I first came to the monastery, and I didn't understand it. I listened to it, but I just didn't get it. But then having trained and meditated with Venerable Ajahn Anand for a long time, I came to understand that all this teaching about not liking or not disliking, it means just to do it. Just don't think about anything, just let go of all the thoughts, just strive, have effort in your meditation. If you're skilled in using a mantra, meditation word, then do that, like puto, puto, or watching the in and out breathing. And whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, then one has effort, perseverance in that. And so if it's peaceful, that's fine. If it's not peaceful, that's fine. And when the time for the meditation period comes to an end, then one moves on to whatever other activity there is, whether it's a work or chore and so on, or some kind of duty that comes up. And so before I would sit meditation, or I'd feel peaceful, and other times I wouldn't feel peaceful and the mind would feel agitated. It would want that peacefulness and think, well, where did that peacefulness go off to? And then this feeling of effort or hard work would come up, wanting to put in effort would come up again. And then this mind would become peaceful, have the strength of peacefulness again, and then it would go away again. And then suffering would arise. And the suffering would arise very quickly, it would arise right away. And then I received the teaching from Venerable Ajahn Anand when he was teaching all the disciples after the fortnightly recitation of the Padimokkha. And this teaching was able to cure the suffering in my mind. Because I saw that in truth, well, when there's this wanting to get peacefulness, then when you get it, you feel happy. When you don't get it, you feel unhappy. So you have to gradually address or gradually cure that wanting in the mind. And so when one just does it bit by bit, and then when we do that, then we just keep meditating, we keep practicing, and we deal with whatever other obstacles come up. So in the beginning, we may not feel peaceful, and it's up to our previously cultivated merit and parami, our previously cultivated spiritual virtues. If in past lives we've done a lot of meditation, then we can get peacefulness quickly. But if we haven't done a lot in the past, then we have to wait first. But in whatever case, in the present life, we need to have effort and perseverance. And then it's possible for all of us to get the fruits of meditation, to get peacefulness from meditation. So we have effort, we have perseverance, and all practitioners need these qualities to reach this happiness of heart in order to see what it's like, this happiness, this peace of mind. It's something that you don't have to seek anywhere else. It's not something that you can buy. It's not something you get from anywhere outside of oneself. Because we see that the Buddha taught that it's something that one does oneself, that the Buddha is merely the way shower. So we have to follow the teachings of the fully self-awakened Buddha. We follow the teachings of Venerable Ajahn Anand as well, who's the teacher who shows us the way as well and answers our questions and doubts. So may all of you set your hearts on this practice of mental cultivation going forward. So therefore we have this effort, this perseverance, this willingness to put in hard work into the meditation, and then we receive the fruits. We can ask, well, are there any rupa, dhamma, any material phenomena that we can receive as fruits or know as fruits here? And so we look at one case where we know the mind as one thing and sense impressions as another. And first hearing this teaching, I didn't understand it. I didn't know about this. So I received the teaching from Venerable Ajahn Anand about this, about the mind, about the sense impressions, about mindfulness, about how they're separate things. In the beginning, I just thought that, you know, life was life, the mind, they're all mixed together. But Venerable Ajahn Anand taught this, and it's something I didn't know before, that the mind receives sense impressions, and if there's no sense impression that comes in, then the mind is bright and radiant. But then when the sense impression contacts the mind receives that mood or sense impression, then follows after that sense impression. Then we have anger, hate, love, delusion, and so on. It's all possible at that point. And so if we have sufficient strength and energy in our meditation, then this can help us to see the mind is just the mind. The sense impressions are just sense impressions. They're two different things. So we can experience this, whether a lot or a little, depending on the strength of our practice, the strength of our mind. Then these sense impressions come to contact the mind. And people that haven't trained the mind, that don't meditate, the sense impression contacts the mind. The mind just isn't quick enough, and anger arises very quickly. But then for those that train in meditation, have some strength and energy from the training in meditation, then when the sense impression contacts the mind, we can have mindfulness with that, or we can experience the mind that doesn't receive sense impressions. Because we have mindfulness through our practice of meditation, this is a wealth that we've cultivated through bhavana. And so we see the value of this. We see how it is when there's no sense impression contacting the mind, or when there is a sense impression contacting the mind, then it's lighter. The suffering in the mind is less. And also the loss that we experience as a result of these heavy moods is less. Like the decisions we make with weak mindfulness, the suffering of that becomes less and less. And so we see this value. This is a material dhamma that brings us benefit in our daily lives. So we see in the world, in the present day, there's a lot of hurrying, a lot of rushing around, whether in work or in various activities, more than before. And so therefore these sense impressions or moods that arise in the mind, if we only train in mindfulness a little bit, then our mindfulness won't be in time, and then suffering arises easily. So therefore we see that one may say that people today suffer a lot, but in truth it's not a lot of suffering. It's, or compared to other times, it's actually all periods of time in the world people suffer the same. It's those who train in mindfulness, they can separate out from these sense impressions and moods, and they have less suffering. And then those that train in mindfulness to where they have samadhi, have this peace of mind, then they get that happiness from the peaceful mind, then that's a great amount of happiness, and that's less suffering. So this is one aspect. Another aspect is the health of the physical body. So we see that this body and mind, that they're very close together. It's not like these sense impressions from outside or from other people, from the environment. These are comparatively far, comparatively far away. But this body or sickness of the body, it's very close to the mind. And so it's something important. So we have to train in mindfulness to give rise to peace and samadhi, to create more of an opening there, more of a space there between the impressions and the mind. Because when the body is ill or sick, then we have to train the mind so that it's not too close to the mind all the time, so that there's some time where it's separate or separated out. And so when we train like this, then the sickness can't affect us. It's just the body. It's not a self, not a mere mind. And this is something that Venerable Ajahn Nun teaches all the time, that it's not self, not a mere mind, that the body is just the body. But this is a high Dhamma. In the beginning, we start gradually training bit by bit. So we're able to do this. So we see that the suffering that arises based on things in the environment or from other people, from these outside sense impressions or from bodily illness, reduce. The suffering gets less. And in this way, then happiness arises in our daily life. And we're able to have this happiness, and this brings goodness and benefit to ourselves and to others. So finally, in closing, I'd like to offer this strength of heart, this energy to all the lady gathered listening. So whether you're just beginning in your Dhamma practice, just starting out, so may you have the strength of heart, the energy to walk further, to keep going with the practice. This is the correct way already, so may you continue on with it. And also strength and energy to all those that have already been practicing, that may you have continued and increasing effort, perseverance, endurance, patience, kanti, because this way that we're practicing, it's the way to Nibbana, where all of us can go to the shore of Nibbana. So I invite the power of all the fully self-awakened Buddhas, all the teachings of the Buddhas, the parami of all the bodhisattvas, of all the awakened disciples of the Buddhas. So may the power of all this help all of you to grow in Dhamma, to progress in your Dhamma practice ever and ever higher.